and welcome to episode 77 of Brody Sports Talk. My name is Caleb Walgren, and I am your host. I am joined by one of the greatest co-hosts of all time, Sean Morgan.
Appreciate that. I was waiting for something snarky. That's wholesome, man. I appreciate the award of being the one of the greatest.
I have to save the snark for other times.
We'll save the snark for picks.
Probably. And besides, we don't know who the Eagles' new coach is yet, so I gotta save some snark for when that comes through.
All I have is apprehension. For disappointment.
From what I know, Sean is not a fan of anything that starts with Mick right now. It doesn't matter what it is. McDonald's.
Yeah, no McDonald's bags. No McDaniels. Coach, please.
So, let me go through the rundown of what we're going to talk about today. We want to talk about some updates that happened on the coaching carousel this past week. Some spots have been filled. There's only two left open, which would be the classic disaster that is the Houston Texans and Sean's Philadelphia Eagles. So we won't be talking about them today. They will get saved for another time.
Probably next week. God, I hope next week.
Then we're going to talk about our Hall of Fame ballots, who we think is going to make it from the modern era finalists for this year. We did one and done discussions last week. Now we have two and done discussions. None of the people that had a bye got eliminated.
Oh, we should call it two and through. We should call it two and through.
Two and through. We are updating it on the fly.
officially on our Google Drive agenda, it is now two and through.
So they were not one and done. They are two and through. And because both the Packers and Chiefs advanced, anything is possible. So we gotta get through the teams that did get eliminated. And then, of course, we'll go through the conference championship, make our game previews, go through our X factors, make some score predictions. And we're just going to lump our picks against the spread in there as well, because it just feels natural compared to
what our haphazard attempt at changing the format last week did not go over as well as we would have liked.
So let's start with the job that I know our friend Zach over at Clutch would say was the most desirable head coaching position available this offseason.
I think it was. I don't think that was a lie.
Not according to Sala, but we'll get into that later. And that is the job of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And they're bringing in someone who has won a lot of games in college. Urban Meyer. If there's anything that I really feel that this hire could do is that Urban will probably succeed for about 5 or 6 years and then leave the team. Sorry if that's a little bit of throwing shade. It felt like this one came out of nowhere to me. Urban never really felt like a NFL head coach to me. This just doesn't seem like it connects. The only thing that I would say it connects is that Pete Carroll took the Seattle job after being good at USC when he knew sanctions were coming down, and Urban kind of retired again when he was getting into issues at Ohio State. And it's now like, whatever, I'll try this NFL thing. I can't get, recruiting sanctions there. So
it's true.
Sean, what were your thoughts about Urban Meyer becoming the new coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars?
So I think I have the same apprehension that a lot of NFL fans do in any coach that you see jump up from the college game that really hasn't had any extensive experience coaching, even positionally, or as a coordinator in the NFL, and that, it's a different challenge working with grown men as opposed to young adults. Now, the interesting thing about Meyer that I think gives him a leg up in this transition is that he's always been that CEO style of coach, dictating certain aspects of running the team, running the offense, running the defense to his coordinators, and kind of serves as a intermediary. And based on what's coming out of the camp, as far as, you know, potential coordinator hires, positional coach hires, everything seems like Meyer isn't going to bring in a bunch of college guys. He's wanting people with pro experience, and he's there to essentially mitigate what needs to be mitigated. I think that is necessary if he wants to succeed in the NFL. That said, don't know how well it's going to work out. He's going to lose more games in his first season than, you know, in like 3, 4, 5 seasons combined as a head coach of Ohio State and Florida. And, you know, being a former Florida coach, God, I hope he fails miserably. Just inherently, like I really legitimately hate that school. But, you know, I do think this is a decent hire. It's a splashy hire, and it's going to put a lot of interest, I think, in Jacksonville that wasn't really there before. From, you know, from the media, from fans, they're looking to see, well, what's Urban Meyer going to do? How is that offense going to turn out with that number one pick, with all those draft picks, with all that everything? How is this going to turn out? So the spotlight's really on them, and this hire has a lot to do with it.
I think the struggle for me is I just feel like the coaches that I've seen make that jump over the last decade or so have been teams that it just didn't work well. Chip Kelly's probably the most notable one that comes to mind. I don't need to tell you what happened with Chip Kelly in the NFL. So I'm not going to belabor the point. The other one, I think it's, we're technically outside of the last decade. Bobby Petrino was a big one where
Petrino, and just to interject, Petrino was a huge mistake for any school that brought him aboard. And you know, Chip Kelly should have never been given the personnel decisions that he was given.
Oh, absolutely.
So one of the, you know, if you look at it, recent years, right? And when I say recent years, I mean bringing in Matt Rhule, and then, you know, after a very short stint, and then Cliff Kingsbury. It's, you know, you've seen these coaches come in and have, it's not like they have immediate, you know, mega success, but they're showing their teams are trending in the right direction. And in a rebuild, that's what you want, right? I mean, I think there's what, from the 2017 Jacksonville squad, there's only like less than 5 players left on that roster. So, you know, it's not as if they're continuing a winning way. This is a team that's been in dire straits for the last couple of years and really needs something special to get them out of it in a division that's pretty tough.
Let's go ahead and keep moving here. The next one that I want to talk about is Arthur Smith to Atlanta. Just kind of a splashy move for Arthur. We talked about him a few episodes back as in our coach in waiting segment. And I think we both could kind of see some of those pros and cons. You know, he worked with Ryan Tannehill and made him look, I don't want to say MVP caliber, but like a top 10 quarterback from someone who's previously a cast off, which is huge. I mean, you normally still don't see NFL quarterbacks, you know, randomly turn their career around after,
you know, basically 6-7 years of mediocrity.
Exactly. Matt Ryan, I think that this is the most exciting thing to happen to him and their offense since they had Kyle Shanahan. It's going to be interesting, I think, because Smith has been in Tennessee for so long. He had been there since 2011. that just kind of getting him used to a new team and a new organization will be potentially part of the toughest part of this transition.
No, hey, Atlanta's not that far of a drive from Nashville.
He is relatively young. He's 38. I think it will be interesting to see what he does. I want to see what happens with the front office. I don't think this is going to be a rebuild because of Smith and Fontenot coming in. I think stealing a GM from within the division is also just really fun because you took away one of the better minds on the Saints front office. I think we would all say the Saints roster construction from top to bottom has been really good. It's even always, if Breeze kind of looked like he was floundering this year.
Yeah. I mean, they've always made decent personnel decisions in being able to stabilize weak points in their roster and keep that. They're not always going to be the greatest, but you know, you can't in the NFL, there's too much parity for you to go through and always have the best unit year in and year out. Sometimes you have to take, you know, hey, if I have a top five, you know, quarterback and a top five running back, maybe I can get away with a top 10 or top 15 offensive line or a top 10, top 15 wide receiver core. You know, as long as I'm tailoring, you know, the roster appropriately to what's going to work for the head coach and what's going to work for the offensive and defensive schemes, then, you know, you're making good choices. And I mean, if anything, you could look at what Tennessee was able to do on offense and see that they were able to go through, tailor what they needed to do with their skill positions and give themselves the best opportunity to win. I mean, if anything, you could look at the defensive side of the ball this season and say that that's what let the Titans down, you know, week in and week out, is the, you know, inability to stop anyone, get pressure on the quarterback. I mean, that's not Smith's thing. So I'm upset as an Eagles fan because this was the coach that I wanted. I think he's going to do a fantastic job. Yeah, he's not going to have a Derrick Henry. There are 31 other NFL teams that don't have a Derrick Henry, and they're doing just fine. They're in, you know, the four teams that are currently gunning for the Super Bowl don't have a Derrick Henry. But Smith was able to do for Tannehill what I think that he sees an opportunity to do for Ryan, who has seen a bit of a career dip and I think is going to see a little bit of a resurgence. He's probably not going to have MVP numbers, but I mean, if you look at the way that that team played this season, where a lot of games were incredibly close, I think there's some opportunity for them to win now. And this was the perfect coach to bring in for that.
It'll be interesting to see if he brings any kind of resurgence back to Todd Gurley. I also think that if you look at that team, they're probably going to throw more than they did. Julio and Ridley are better than Brown and Corey Davis. It doesn't take much to figure that out. Groundbreaking strategy talk here at Brody Sports.
You said brown breaking for a second. I was like, hey, but that's not what you said.
Yeah, closely. I do think that if you're thinking of someone whose fantasy value may go up, Hayden Hurst is going to be used more. At tight end, Smith was a tight end's coach. We had talked about that previously. That's what he did with Jonnu Smith.
Jonnu Smith was great.
Absolutely. And that's because that's more of his specialty on offense. So I think we're going to see more tight end sets and less 4-5 wide type sets. So I'm excited for what's going to happen in Atlanta. I think that I don't know if I can say that they will contend for the division next year, because I think that they need to rebuild on their offensive line and work on their defense. But whenever Brady retires, like after next year, I think that the Falcons are definitely a threat for the division with Smith long-term.
I actually think that the challenge for the division next year, I think that looking objectively at this year, you can say that, you know, there are five games at least that they threw away that should have been W's but weren't. And this is a competitive division, but it's a division that is going to be losing an elder statesman, so to speak, that I think is going to, and we'll talk about that here a little bit later, that I think is going to really change the face of this division. And this is a prime opportunity for the Falcons to step up. And if there is any team in the NFL that I think is going to have the best turnaround, as far as like wins go, I do think that it's going to be the Falcons.
Interesting. Well, let's go north. We're going to go to the New York Jets. They've hired Robert Saleh. And we had talked about Saleh and coach in waiting as well, so I don't want to belabor the points. Man, he was so good on that defense with the 49ers, even with all the injuries they had this year. I think that it will be exciting to see what he does and how he kind of turns around the Jets. Obviously, that being said, he's got his work cut out for him. They are in a rebuild. I don't think anyone is going to say the Jets are back anytime soon, but I do think that they have a winner of a coach in Saleh. That's part of why we had spotlighted him. We knew that he had a chance and was definitely a solid hire wherever he went. Sean, anything you really want to add on him?
I'm surprised he went to the Jets and felt that that was the best landing spot. I don't know what it is that he's seen either about the organization or the roster or just, you know, the entire situation period. Because objectively speaking, out of all of the organizations that had job openings, the Jets have generally been relatively dysfunctional for the last, two decades. But there's something there that he feels that he can work with. And out of all of the hires that the Jets could have made, I do think that he is going to bring the most. And, you know, we'll just see what they do with pick number two.
And then let's move to the job that may be the fastest rise. The Los Angeles Chargers hired Brandon Staley, the defensive coordinator of the Rams. I jokingly said that he didn't have to move, and I was listening to another podcast where they said they practice way far away from where the Rams do. So it's still probably like a 30, 40 minute drive to get to work. That's not horrible. There's a lot of people that commute like that.
Oh, so. No.
Especially in LA. It is interesting. When I've looked up information about Staley, he was hired by the Bears in 2017 to be their outside linebacker coach. And then Vic Fangio brought him over to Denver, and then he was a defensive coordinator for 1 year, and now he's a head coach. So he's only been in the NFL for 4 years. Now, granted, first in points and total yards allowed, that's big. Personally, I would have rather have them bring someone in who I think is going to groom Herbert a little bit and make sure that their offense doesn't have really boneheaded, dumb play calls in crucial moments and knows how to run like the 2-minute drill. And maybe bring in a special teams coordinator to be the head coach, because my goodness, have the Chargers had kicking issues for like the last forever.
Yes. I don't know, man. Like, for me, when you've got a young quarterback, sometimes, yeah, head coach is everything. But I mean, if you look at, you know, my team, for example, the whole, you know, Doug Peterson, Carson Wentz, like, relationship, if anything, that's Frank's quarterback. And he's in Indianapolis now. So, and we saw after he left kind of the regression that came with it. So as long as Staley's able to get a good, you know, OC, I think that that's not as much of a concern. And the fact that he, you know, McVay is, his name is gold in the NFL. Right. I mean, you guys can say that, you know, Matt LaFleur has turned out pretty decent so far. And I mean, I haven't heard too many complaints out of Cincy in regards to Zach Taylor. I mean, he did as best as he could with the circumstances they were dealt. I think it's an intriguing hire. I love this trend of grabbing younger names and fresher faces. Right. This is such a sharp contrast to what we've seen in the NFL, I would say about a decade ago, where it was always the same names just getting, you know, rehashed over and over. It's like the opposite of the NBA, you know, where it's your head coach in the NBA. Well, great. You probably over the course of your career were a head coach of 12 teams. This trend, I love it. And I really do hope that he succeeds. I think he's a bright mind. And I mean, you got to see what the Rams were able to do. I know I rattled off all the statistics they were number one in last week. Obviously made no dang difference. But, you know, it's Green Bay is a tough place to play in January.
Sorry, I was looking up information on Brandon Staley and totally ended up in a weird rabbit hole as you were talking.
I know, I was looking. So, you guys obviously can't see it, but I was looking at Caleb. He was just like zoning off. I can see the reflection of the monitor in his glasses. And it's just like he's so now I'm sitting here talking basically to myself. And then, you know, it's thank you for paying attention, Caleb. Appreciate it.
Oh, so I just have to bring this up. So Brandon Staley in his coaching career, it says from 2010 to 2011, he was the associate head coach and defensive coordinator at Hutchinson Community College. Hutchinson, Kansas is a town of like very few people. It's like 30 to 40 miles northwest of Wichita. And I've been there a few times and there's not a whole lot there. And then I happened to see some people that were alumni of Hutchinson Community College, including Alvin Kamara and Cordarrelle Patterson.
What?
Also, after that stint, he was a grad assistant for the 2012 Tennessee Volunteers football team. And I'm like, of course Sean loves this guy.
Yeah.
He was a grad assistant under Derek Dooley, and somehow he's becoming an NFL head coach.
Something Dooley will never have on his resume. Oh man,
can we officially imagine? Put him under the Derek Dooley coaching tree? We are label.
Is there even such a thing?
I'm sure there's not much of one, but we're counting it. If nothing else, I was like, I don't think Sean has any idea that this guy was a coach at Tennessee at one point, so I have to bring that up because that is somewhat hilarious and very enjoyable. Man. And then I was like, so you went from this community college in Kansas to Tennessee, and somehow Cordarrelle Patterson and Alvin Kamara also went to Tennessee. There are worse ways to hire people. That's all. You know,
I haven't really kept track of Dooley's career after he left. But apparently, right, for a while he was coaching in the NFL for the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Giants. So if there's anything that's going to continue to drive my hatred for this man, it's his post-Tennessee coaching choices.
It also looks like he was at Mizzou for a while, which probably doesn't help anything.
Yeah, I did remember, because I remember some stories coming out a couple years back about like that matchup potentially and him coming back into Knoxville. So,
and then we have the first time as a official head coach, the not yet technically announced Dan Campbell to the Detroit Lions. Campbell is probably best known for being the interim head coach for the Dolphins early in his coaching career because Philbin got fired during the whole Bullygate fiasco, whatever thing, probably one of the lesser known gate scandals over the last decade of football. And he ended up going 5-7 with a team that was not good before that. So he's been with the Saints for a long time. He actually formerly was a member of the Detroit Lions. He was part of the 08 team that went 0-16. If there's anyone who understands how bad the Detroit Lions are, it's Dan Campbell. So you definitely can understand why he might have been an off the radar guy, but you know, former Lion, probably a bit of an old school guy with 10 years in the league. I think that it'll be interesting to see what happens with him there. I think people consider him a Parcells disciple. So different mindset, and especially after the fiasco of Patricia, you know, calling people like just
throwing everyone he could under the bus.
Absolutely. And not running an organization professionally. I think that Campbell is primarily being brought in because of the culture shift. And they said, it's not all about X's and O's. You know what? I'm just glad that they're not trying to bring in a defensive coordinator from the Patriots. They did it with Schwartz. They did it with Patricia. It's not working. They're bringing in someone different. They had some sort of philosophical change, and Campbell is going to be their guy. I definitely think that there's a chance for this to go well, which I don't really love as a Packers fan, but I also kind of go, Detroit has to win something at some point. Even if
there has to be a shift division. Sometime. It's a weird thing for me, right? Because this is, to me, a very un-Lions hire. And I don't know exactly how I feel about that. Because when we were talking about the coaching carousel before on the podcast, I felt like they were the most likely team to go through and potentially get a retread. But, you know, it makes a lot of sense that having a change in just everything for the organization is really necessary at this point, because they haven't won anything for a very long time. There are also a lot of worse coaches out there that you could learn from than Sean Payton. And to go through and be with the Saints organization for, you know, for a good 4 or 5 years, get an idea of how they operate and how a successful head coach runs his day-to-day. I think that's the other thing too, is we see sometimes a lot of these coordinators really bounce around, maybe 1 year here, 2 years here, 2 years here, you know, moving up, and then eventually getting a head coaching job. And the idea is, you know, hey, you learned a little bit from everybody. Well, sometimes that little bit you learn from everybody doesn't really give you the consistency that you need to establish a good system where you land. And then you look at people who have worked with a specific, you know, head coach for a while, who has a system and an approach like Sean Payton's, who I feel transitions and translates to a lot of different organizations a little bit better than somebody, say, like Bill Belichick, who has a very particular way of handling things. That's one of the reasons I think the Andy Reid coaching tree is also pretty decent for similar reasons, is that you should be able to learn from how he approaches stuff and apply it to your organization. Now, whether or not that ultimately ends up successful, of course, depends on the individual. But I think that this is an intriguing hire out of all of them. I mean, maybe not as intriguing as the Urban Meyer hire. Urban Meyer hire. But it's decently close, actually. And I'm interested to see who has more success in 2021.
It'll definitely be interesting. I think both situations are not easy situations, and definitely going to be interesting to turn over, especially if, like you said, Matthew Stafford gets traded to the Colts, like you said last year. That would really make things hard for Dan Campbell.
It'd be rough. Be a rough go.
Well, let's go ahead and go through who we think is going to make the Pro Football Hall of Fame from the modern era ballot this year. There are 15 candidates, and only five will go. Sean and I are both going to pick our five. Sean, I'll let you take over.
Just to give everybody an idea really quick, run down the list of candidates. Jared Allen, Rondé Barber, Tony Boselli, Leroy Butler, Alan Faneca, Torrey Holt, Calvin Johnson, John Lynch, Peyton Manning, Clay Matthews, the second, Sam Mills, Richard Seymour, Zach Thomas, Reggie Wayne, and Charles Woodson. So there are a few that I feel are going to be auto includes. Peyton Manning, obviously, and Charles Woodson. They're historically joined for various reasons, and so how appropriate that they are enshrined at the same time, which means that there are three that I feel can be, you know, up in the air. For me, I think that we see Clay Matthews get in. This is the last year that he is eligible for the modern era. If he doesn't get it, he's moving to the senior eligibility list. And, you know, while that, you know, nothing against players who make it in that way, they're just looked at through a different lens. And that's one of the reasons why it's not maybe as prestigious. But I do think he gets in. And then for me, the other two, I'm going to say John Lynch. I feel like his contributions for the Bucs, especially during that Super Bowl era, were significant, more so than I think Rondé Barber. So I feel like Barber probably doesn't get in until Lynch does, if he ever does. And then we're going to go with, Manning, Woodson, Matthews, Lynch. You know what? I feel like, you know, an offensive lineman's going to get in. Give me Faneca over Boselli.
Excellent. You said it right this time too. So
I did. During our opener, I kept mispronouncing it.
I'm going to disagree on just a few. I agree on the automatics. Peyton Manning, Charles Woodson, congrats. Definite first ballot Hall of Famers, and no one's surprised by any of that. I actually also agree on Clay Matthews Jr. I think that what he has done for that longevity of his career, it's also one where he's still a finalist. He's in the 20th year of eligibility. I feel like he's just going to be able to get that push, that sentimental push of, hey, let's get him in before the senior board has to pick. Because especially the senior board sometimes likes to go with much older players. Mm-hmm. And if you can put him in now,
nobody wants to make it. Yeah, I mean, this actually is kind of an awkward thing. Nobody wants to make it posthumously, but nobody wants to see players elected. At that point, is it feels more superficial. So get the man in while, you know, he can still take it all in.
Absolutely. I am going to go with arguably some controversial ones for my other picks on this ballot. And it would just be Calvin Johnson. I think despite his short career, the 9 years that he played, he was phenomenal. And I don't even know if phenomenal does justice to how good he was. Now without him, I would tend to say Julio Jones has that mantle of how you would build a receiver currently in the league. But Calvin Johnson was always how I would build a receiver. Super strong, great hands, crazy good with touchdowns, with receptions. I don't know how many times I saw him torch us, and maybe that's part of it. I just know that he shut people down so much just by beating them. And he was on a horrible Lions team. Like, he doesn't have, you know, playoff stats hardly because they never went. They
never made it.
Like, I think technically they made it 1 year, but they lost to the Cowboys in the playoffs that year. So that's not really saying much.
Gross. Who does that?
And the other one I'm going to go with is one that you mentioned and passed on, and that would be Rondé Barber. I know that it may not be a now thing, and it may be just my revisionist history, but Rondé Barber, for first, definitely the best Barber brother. Let's just throw that out there.
Yeah. I will accept that one 100%.
I knew you were not going to have qualms about that. Just before, like, Revis Island and, like, islands were a thing for corners to be called, I feel like Rondé Barber embodied that as someone who I saw play corner, undersized, definitely not, like, the biggest, strongest corner. He's not a Richard Sherman who's got, like, 3 or 4 inches on him. Rondé Barber was just that shifty, and that he had that good touch and he had good ball skills. I really just enjoyed seeing him play. Now, I don't know that I enjoyed seeing him play all that much, because when you were against him, you knew it was not going to be pretty. But he was that good, and I feel like I maybe I'm just remembering him stronger than Lynch. Maybe it was later in Lynch's career. I just really appreciated what he did for that Bucs defense as well. And maybe we get Barber and Lynch somehow, and they put the Bucs in, like, the Hall of Fame game. Like, that'd be hilarious if Brady had to play in the Hall of Fame game.
That would be pretty funny. I mean, like I said, I would like to see that. At the same time, I don't necessarily think that they grab both. I feel like for voters, they're probably going to associate them in kind of the same way. And a similar reason why I think this isn't Leroy Butler's year either is because Charles Woodson's going to kind of steal some of that spotlight. And, you know, I think that Calvin Johnson deserves to be a first ballot, his career was short. And when you're like, if this was any other year, then what I feel is a relatively stacked year, then he would be considered. I think he might be on the outside looking in. If you one last question on this, and for these 15 names, if you had to pick one that you thought would not see the Hall of Fame in the end, or will not see it, who would you go with? And why is it Torrey Holt? Because I know you hate him.
Oh, why you got to do me dirty like that?
Was it Torrey Holt?
I got to pull the list back up because I asked close.
for me, I'll go ahead while you're pulling that up. I'll talk through it. For me, right, I think that if I had to pick a name that would be a little bit more recognizable, you know, outside of some Saints fans, probably not, you know, Sam Mills wasn't the most memorable name. I would actually have to go with Reggie Wayne. I think that while Wayne was fantastic when he played, if not, you know, exceptional, for much of his career, he was outshined. And, you know, like Marvin Harris, the whole Marvin Harrison, Peyton Manning connection was, you know, something special, something historic. And people are going to look at Wayne's career and say how much of that was the fact that he played 13, 14 years, you know, in a Peyton Manning system, basically, for the vast majority of his career. I mean, what, it was like 2 or 3 years, relatively, like, lowered production once Manning was gone. I think that's going to hurt him in the long run, especially because for, you know, a lot of voters, they are, you know, that era, that quarterback era was so memorable. and you look at, you know, a lot of the wide receivers that played with Tom Brady over the years, no names that never really amounted to a whole lot. You look at, you know, like Peyton Manning's made a lot of receivers look exceptionally good. How much is that going to factor in? I think a decent amount. So now that you've had time to look over the list, who do you think it is and why is it Torrey Holt?
So I'm not going to go with Torrey Holt. I do think Torrey Holt has a good chance. I know Bruce technically was part of last year's class as part of the greatest show on turf. The name that really just doesn't, that seems a bit out of place to me is probably Richard Seymour. And it's not that Richard Seymour wasn't a good player. It's that I don't know that the statistics back up him being a Hall of Famer. I think that he had some solid years with the New England Patriots, and he was part of that dynasty. But I also think because he was part of that dynasty, people are going to pick other people from the team. And that I think Seymour is going to end up being overlooked and overshadowed by his colleagues in New England. And I looked, he has less than 60 sacks. And I know that sacks isn't the end all be all, but when you have someone like Jared Allen in this year's class who has like 136,
yeah, I think
Jared has Allen a much more a memorable years. Personality.
Oh yeah.
Like no one's like, who's Jared Allen? Whereas, I mean, Jared Allen basically came up with the sack dance. Like,
I think another thing too that kind of gives Richard Seymour a bit of a knock is that when people look at Super Bowl wins, right? People don't generally look at defensive Super Bowl wins as a metric for Hall of Fame eligibility, right? Because it's that inherent bias. And I think you're right. I think if you look at, you know, his career and Jared Allen's career side by side, if anything, that's the thing that Seymour has above him. That you know, he's just got those Super Bowl wins. And yeah, you know, we'll see. We'll see how accurate we are. We'll see if we'll mention it next episode if we went 0-5 or 5-5.
We're definitely going 5-5. That's for sure.
Oh yeah. Both, well, I mean, we definitely go hard for these picks, and we're probably the most accurate that you'll ever hear in anything that we pick, except for the power rankings. Power rankings were 100% spot on.
Absolutely. We're going to go ahead and pause for a quick moment, and then we'll be right back with our two and through discussions.
Two and through.
Welcome back to Brody Sports Talk, and we're going to start those two and through discussions. We're going in the order that teams got eliminated. So first, Sean, in what was a tight NFC West this past year, do you think that the Rams can make a return to the playoffs next season after losing their defensive coordinator, Brandon Staley? We already mentioned he went to the Chargers. And we do know now they're bringing in Raheem Morris to be their defensive coordinator. What are your thoughts?
I think Raheem Morris is a fine hire for that. Overall, I don't see too much of a dip, right? Scheme plays a lot. I think that continuity in personnel also plays a pretty big factor. So we'll see. I don't know who the Rams have as like potential free agent losses on that side of the ball that could play a part. Now keep in mind the Rams made it in kind of by the skin of their teeth. It's in the same way that the Bears did. There's a lot of parity in the NFC around, I would say, the 7-9 win mark. And so to say, yes, they can make the playoffs next year without Brandon Staley, I think is an accurate statement. Because ultimately, you don't really know who is going to end up in that 7-9 win mark and who you're going to have the tiebreakers over. The Rams did a fantastic job at controlling a lot of teams this year. And we'll see what happens with the whole Goff situation. I think that actually is going to play more of a factor than Brandon Staley's departure.
I would tend to agree. We're going to see a lot of the same defensive stalwarts, the big names, Donald, Ramsey, they're going to be back. Potentially, you know, looking at their free agent list, I know Leonard Floyd was on a $10 million contract this year. I don't know if he's coming back as a pass rusher. Troy Hill made some pretty big plays in the secondary for them. He's a free agent as well. Granted, he wasn't that expensive in the first place, so they might be able to bring him back. But who knows? Maybe Staley tries to get him in to go across town. I think I'm going to say that the Rams are not going to make the playoffs next year just because it is too close for comfort. Staley did call a lot of good defensive plays, and I think he really did help elevate the level of the defense this past offseason. Even I think of a play like them intercepting the screen pass to DK Metcalf in the playoff game. It was the only time anyone has picked off a screen pass all year on a wide receiver screen. That's huge. So I think that, I don't know if the player saw it in film. I don't know if Staley saw it in film. I don't know if one of his assistants saw it in film. I think that the coaching turnover is going to hurt the defense. I can't expect them to be number one in total points and yards and all of the things that they were number one in again next year. Plus, I think we all know how big I am on the Arizona train.
Yeah.
I think Arizona might win the division next year. We don't know who the OC is going to be in Seattle, and I kind of want to see what on earth they're doing up there.
I don't know if it's going to matter. It's still going to be the...
Plus, Shanahan is going to potentially have an actual football team to coach.
I know. They haven't even really thought about that.
And they beat the Rams twice anyway. I just don't see the Rams being able to bounce back effectively, especially because I don't trust their offense. Cam Akers looked great, and I know you kind of called that even back at the draft. We said that they should draft Akers and play Akers. I don't know that you've been more right on a rookie before, Sean. So
I'll take it.
I just don't see enough.
That's fair.
Let's move to the next team, the Baltimore Ravens. What a weird day for them. They only scored 3 points in their divisional round game against the Bills, and Justin Tucker missed 2 kicks. Not what you normally expect out of the Ravens. We're only 12 months removed from Lamar Jackson's MVP award being given to him. But it seems like there was a whole lot of question marks going on with Greg Roman and that offense. So the question is, can the Ravens offense do enough to win a Super Bowl? And to be fair, they've only won one playoff game with it. So that's kind of asking a lot.
No, that's fair. I don't know. I really don't. And it seems if observable trends or anything, they can win in the regular season. But execution in the playoffs is everything. And we saw an offense that was misfiring in a lot of ways and a passing game that proved very, very unreliable. And to be fair to the Ravens, it's not as if everybody was really able to shut down the run effectively for the most part this season. Even, you know, the playoff contenders and playoff teams that they played, they were still able to get the ball, you know, going on the ground. Well, the problem becomes is when it's a playoff game. The stakes are higher and you have to be able to adapt. This offense wasn't really able to adapt. And I know that, what was it, Marquise Brown, who came out and was like upset that they didn't throw the ball more and kind of, yeah, anytime a player goes public with something like that, it always leaves a very sour taste in my mouth. Because I have to wonder if it got to the point where they were okay with speaking to the media and venting frustrations. What's going on behind the scenes, right? What has been going on for a long period of time? Maybe this is something that's just starting to boil over. 3 points in a playoff game. Yeah, you're not an SEC team. That's not acceptable.
I struggle with this one.
Ultimately, I realize I didn't answer the question. Ultimately, my answer is no.
Okay. I do think it's interesting because the Bills had 120 yards less of offense than the Ravens. And the Ravens actually had more passing yards. Tyler Huntley had 60 of them. But they had more passing yards. And part of that could be that they had to come back. But you definitely can't blame the defense.
No, they did everything that was asked of them, I think.
I think if anything, they need Lamar Jackson to have a passing bump the way that Josh Allen did this past year. They need to transform their offense enough, and I don't think they can do it the way it's currently built. I do think that it is a current offense issue. You get into the playoffs, everyone knows you're going to run. There's not enough offensive weapons. Lamar Jackson is not that effective as a passer currently. One of the things that I think would be interesting is who can they go get at the wide receiver position? Can they trade for someone who's more of a number one than Marquise Brown?
Wouldn't be a bad idea.
Your receivers are Marquise Brown, Willie Snead, Miles Boykin, and you're playing Dez Bryant. Dez Bryant, who had been out of football games at least for like multiple seasons. It's not really a great sign of your talent.
No,
the Bills went and paid the first round price to get Stephon Diggs this offseason. Look at how big that changed them.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I mean they got to see the success of doing exactly that on the other side of the field. And if anything, that should hopefully serve as a motivator of having that go-to guy, that reliable guy to bail. Lamar Jackson, you can't look and say that is not a talented quarterback. That is not a capable quarterback. You don't have an MVP season as a blip, really. And I think that with him being this early in his career, that if they don't make the right moves this offseason to balance that offense better and maybe get him a more reliable guy, whether that is via the draft, whether that's via free agency or a trade, you know, do something to get him some stability and let him develop. Because if he has another mediocre year coupled with either missing the playoffs or an early playoff exit, that could be a long-term confidence killer. Because you know how much he rode on the, you know, people calling him a running back. And that was a huge motivator for him. So it's obviously he's a very confidence-driven player. And he's already had that, you know, that early exit, that feeling of, you know, having an amazingly successful year and then just getting bounced in the playoffs. And, you know, it's weird to me, right? His career trajectory, I think, very much feels like, oh my God, why am I suddenly blanking on his name? Oh man, I am out of it. Quarterback, Panthers.
Cam Newton.
It feels very Cam Newton-esque. when, you know, Newton basically had the, you know, a 15-win season. And then pretty much since then, you know, injuries, of course, played a factor. But, you know, there was another very confidence-driven player who had multiple times that confidence taken away from him, and he was never able to fully recover it. Much like I'm not able to fully recover after reading one of his Instagram posts. God, have you ever seen?
Oh gosh, they are horrible.
How do you type like that? I don't understand. Maybe I'm the one that's.
Maybe he has a translator where he just types in what he was going.
I'm sure there's got to be a Cam Newton translator app where you can go through and translate things to and from Cam Newton like esque language.
If there's not, we need to create it. The Brody Sports Talk Cam Newton translator. If you're smart and you would like it, we have the name. You just need to do the work for it.
We're in the market. We're in the market.
So I just pulled up a list of people who are free agents this coming off season. I think Allen Robinson is the biggest name as far as someone who's younger and would be very dynamic to put opposite of Marquise Brown. I know AJ Green, Hilton, Fitzgerald, those are guys are all free agents, but they're all older. I do think that Robinson is the biggest one. If you're looking for someone coming off of a rookie deal, you might see someone like a Will Fuller. I just feel like Fuller and Brown are too similar.
Yeah, it feels very samey.
So I would think Allen Robinson could make some bank and get signed by the Ravens this offseason.
Ravens have any draft capital they can trade? Maybe there's a certain Alabama wide receiver that could change their fortunes.
Which Alabama receiver are you talking about?
What do you mean, which Alabama receiver am I talking about? You're looking at me very confused.
I feel like you're talking about Julio, but I don't think that.
No, I'm talking about in the draft.
Oh, yeah, they don't have that much draft capital.
You're going to be like, who are you talking about?
Sorry, I thought you were talking about trading for a current player, capital to draft.
Yeah.
They're not getting Devonta Smith, so. Or Jalen Waddle, probably. They'll probably both be off the board.
You never know. You never know.
So
crazier things have happened.
We saw some amazing things in 2021 so far. The Browns won a playoff game and they won in Pittsburgh.
They remember I told them for Christmas, I gave them one playoff win.
They took it and now they are done. I feel like we kind of know a little bit of what we're getting from that offense with Stefanski after year one. I'm kind of only expecting it to look smoother and more polished in year two. Do you see something that could come in and make a big impact on their defense this coming year?
So defensively, obviously, yeah, there are quite a few options. So I actually have a couple of them that I've picked out. So I'm going to ask you to tell me, do you think that their biggest issues were defensive line, linebacker, or in the secondary? What did you feel were their biggest? Was their biggest weakness? Now I'm talking about just in the playoffs, because obviously you can look at the secondary and say, yeah, you know what? And they almost let the Steelers come back in. So that was a bit much. And the linebacker core has been iffy. But you know, what do you think is their weakest spot?
I tend to go with the defensive line just because I know there was a game or two where Garrett was out this year and they looked like a completely different defense. I really feel like it needs some balance on that pass rush.
Ngakoue, I think that, you know, Ravens, he didn't really have the impact with the Ravens they would have liked. Him lining up across Garrett, I think would be pretty interesting. And you know, I mean, you've seen what he can do.
Absolutely. I actually saw Ngakoue as well. The other one that would be stealing someone from within the division that would be interesting would be potentially getting Bud Dupree. I don't think there's a wrong answer from either of them. Take them away from you know, potentially re-signing with their current team and bring them in to be opposite Garrett. We already know Dupree's been pass rushing for opposite TJ Watt. Clearly that has not worked out poorly for him. I do think Ngakoue might be potentially the splashier move and the better fit with their current defensive scheme. So,
and it does feel very Browns-esque too. So,
plus, I mean, the Browns are already bringing in people that are that were at least considered controversial, like Odell. So I think that adding Ngakoue to the bunch is just going to feel like a home away from home for him.
I agree.
Last but not least, we do get to the Saints, where I do have to admit that Sean was right. He picked the Bucs to pull the upset, and I was wrong. Granted, I didn't mention before that I picked the Browns to cover, and they did. But now that's all. We're all even.
Hey, there. I mean, that's fine. I legitimately feel if Mahomes had stayed in, the interception in the end zone probably wouldn't have happened, and the Browns wouldn't have had the opportunity to kind of claw their way back in. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
True. We're talking about the Saints now, so we all saw, I think, the footage of Drew Brees after the game having Tom Brady throw passes to his kids on the Superdome field, and it definitely, everyone was saying he was going to retire. Jay Glazer came out and said, hey, he's going to retire. This is last season, you know, kind of putting the official marks on it. What do you think the Saints should do with the quarterback position next year?
Oh, God. I don't know. when you put this question in our agenda, and I kind of looked it over a couple of times and really tried to think objectively about what it is that the Saints should do going forward, I think that's probably the toughest question this organization is going to ask itself and will have asked itself over the last maybe 30 or 40 years, because this was a time period of historic success for this organization. And a Hall of Fame quarterback that they brought in kind of on a wing and a prayer, right? They were hoping that, you know, after him being injured with the Chargers, that, you know, he was the right call. And, you know, you go back to the reason why Nick Saban was fired from the Dolphins is because he thought that Dante Culpepper was the answer. And obviously that didn't pan out. So looking at the, you know, moving on from somebody like this, what do you do and how do you do it, right? I don't know if any of the quarterbacks that are on the roster are long-term solutions. Winston, to me, feels like the most plug-and-play, but obviously that wasn't what Sean Payton felt like this year. So I don't know. I'm actually turning to you on this one because hopefully you have an answer that is a little bit better than I don't know. But I can't see how the Saints feel comfortable with anything, with trading for, I mean, trading for somebody feels stupid, right? You've got two quarterbacks on the roster that you can at least plug in and keep trucking, right? But you're a team that's was successful, I think, almost in spite of Drew Brees this season. So do you gamble on, you know, your guys that you have being good enough to get you back there? Or do you go out and try and get somebody that's at least going to get you over the divisional hump? I don't know.
If there's one thing I can really say for sure, it's that the Saints have consistently, probably similarly to the Eagles, valued the quarterback position and valued a lot of depth and variety at that position. There's a reason why Taysom Hill is on the big contract he's on. I don't really think that you want to give him a one-year deal or that you let him play out his deal with the keys to the kingdom, because I feel like Taysom is not a long-term solve. And I feel like Jameis is technically a free agent. He probably knows if he's going to be able to beat out Taysom or not. If he resigns, I think that there's a chance that he wins the starting job. All of it just feels a little bit puzzling to me.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
So I go two things: bring in a vet and potentially trade up. you know, if the draft starts falling the way that you like, go get a Mac Jones or a Trey Lance or whoever, whatever quarterback is falling, because no matter who you talk to, there's like five or six quarterbacks that everyone tends to love in this draft. Go get one of them. And while you're at it, why don't you go sign Ryan Fitzpatrick or Andy Dalton to a 1 or 2 year deal? You know, let them compete with Taysom. If Taysom shows he's going to be a better passer, fine. Fitzpatrick knows how to come off the bench too.
Yeah.
Dalton sure looked a whole lot better with McCarthy this year than he did most of the years in Cincinnati. And we all know that the Saints have the weapons to put around him. I don't think that those are long-term answers, but I think that those could be a answer while developing.
And I guess the weird thing for me, right, whenever I try to think about this, is with a Saints team that is stacked enough to win the division, you know, get what they had 12 wins, right? And you know, make the divisional, you'd think that, you know, continuing to try to play the short-term game feels like you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, and that you're setting yourself up for a lot more hurt later on. I don't know what their draft capital looks like. I don't know what their cap space looks like, or what some of their trade options look like with some, you know, expiring contracts, or, you know, what they can do to shuffle some pieces around. But it's so, you know, you look at teams that lose Hall of Fame, you know, caliber quarterbacks on years that they have done well, right? It's a difference in, you know, Rivers leaving the Chargers, right? There's a difference in, you know, when you have like a quarterback go somewhere else off of a down year, or retire off of a down year. You look at, you know, when Manning left Denver, you look at, you know, what the Steelers are probably going to have to deal with when Big Ben goes. You know, these are teams that are coming off of, you know, double digit win seasons and do not have the draft options that other teams do. And they kind of kick themselves a bit for a year or two, because you still have a team that's good enough to win you games in the playoffs. So how do you balance that? Is this the reason I'm not an NFL GM? Because I don't know. I don't know how to answer that.
And they don't have Fontenot there to help figure it out.
Score one for Atlanta.
Let's go ahead and move to the games that still matter, the conference championships games. The first one we have is a 3-point contest. The Packers are favored by 3, hosting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Brady versus Rodgers arguably has been one of the games where, when you've finally gotten it over the past decade or so, the like once every 4 years that the Patriots and Packers played each other, you appreciated it. I know one of those rounds Matt Flynn was in, so that was not terribly interesting. But it's going to be a cold night in Green Bay. Sean, who do you have as your X factors for that contest?
I think it's going to, I'm going to actually give it to the running backs. I know I said Fournette this past week, and I was kind of, I don't want to say vindicated, but I think the running game played a huge factor in being able to consistently move the sticks, because even though Brady won, I don't think he was overwhelmingly good. And there are a lot of, not say poorly thrown balls, but balls that he probably wouldn't have looked as ugly in, you know, years past. So for me, being able to have that offensive balance, I think is significant. I mean, you look on the other side and Aaron Jones is arguably the better guy, and is going to, you know, really need to step it up here in order to make sure that it's not all completely on Rodgers to carry. If you go back to the, and you know what, actually, let me scratch that. I don't care about the earlier game. I don't, because I don't really feel like it plays as much of a factor here, and that this is the, you know, both teams are what, you know, like they've got a playoff win, two playoff wins, and for the Bucs, and that's really all that matters. So for me, the running backs, I think are my go-to for, you know, the keys to the game.
I'm going to go a little bit different. I'm looking at the other side of the ball. I think that what the Buccaneers do at the outside linebacker position is going to be critical. Shaquille Barrett, Jason Pierre-Paul, both are needing to have an impact on the game. We know that the Packers are without David Bakhtiari. They have been, though, for a few weeks. The Rams didn't sack Aaron Rodgers. That's not a recipe for beating the Packers. You just got to get to him. I don't know who's going to. I don't know if it'll be Sue up the middle. I don't know if it'll be Barrett or Pierre-Paul. I just think that the Bucs defense really has to figure out a way with this revamped Packers O-line, how they're going to get there. And to be honest, without Bakhtiari, I thought that the Rams were going to get more pressure than they did.
This is good game planning.
But
it's great game planning.
I mean, good game planning, and they got depth at that position. I mean, it's not just, hey, we have a really good left tackle. It's we have a good offensive line. There's a reason Corey Linsley was all pro this year at center, because he knows how to call out the right assignments for these people that keep lining up at multiple positions on the O-line. As far as the Packers are concerned, I'm going to go with Chris Barnes. He's probably someone that people are like, who is that guy? He's a linebacker. He's not terribly well known. He's young. He wasn't really playing on our defense during the last contest because he's still kind of coming into his own as a rookie. I think that what he and Kirksey do in the middle of the defense for the Packers is going to say a whole lot of how this game turns out, because if the inside linebackers are shutting down the run and the Bucs have to go to this passing game, that just lets Preston and Za'Darius tee off against Brady. We all know Brady's not terribly mobile, and if you hit him, that's not going to – he's not going to play
what
well.
What are you
talking about?
Have you seen his 40 time? Clocks in at a smooth 31.6 seconds. No.
I was like, I don't have enough time to watch that video.
Actually, no. Interestingly enough, if you go back and you start the video at the time we started the podcast, he would just now be crossing the finish line.
Absolutely. He's no Chad Henne. That's the...
But who is, really? There's only one.
There's only one
Henne.
So, to go ahead and put a score prediction out there, the Bucs are definitely a team that, as I've said, as a Packers fan, they make me nervous. I am still going to take the Packers to win this one outright. I'm going with a Packers 30, Bucs 24 to cover the 3 points. I wouldn't be surprised if it's close or closer, but I definitely think that what you said earlier, I don't know if you saw Rodgers' comments earlier in the day, but they asked him if the 38-10 game meant anything about how this game was going to be. And he said, I think it means about as much as the Saints 38-3 win over them earlier this year.
I did see that. And it's an absolutely fair assessment, right? Because you know, if history has proven anything, that, you know, teams that make it to the championship games are riding a lot of momentum, and they are showcasing great performances when it matters. So if you're trying to tell me about a week 5, week 6 game in, you know, end of January, nobody gives a crap. Really point blank. I'm actually going to take the Bucs here. I think this game does end up being incredibly close. I do feel that it's going to be deceptively high scoring. And I think that the Bucks end up like just edging them out. So I'm going to go with a 34-31 win for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to set up a very interesting matchup for the Super Bowl.
Well, let's go to the AFC game. Oh man, that hurts. I sure hope you're wrong. It is also a 3-point game with the Chiefs favored by 3 currently. It all kind of depends on where you look, because even though it's Bills Chiefs, two great offenses, the big question is, when is Patrick Mahomes coming out of concussion protocol and will he play Sunday? That sure throws a whole lot of confusion over me when it comes to picking this spread, you know, 5 days before game day. Sean, who are you? I'll let you go first with your X factors again for this contest.
Sure. For me, right on the Chiefs side, I'm actually going to go with the guy we've been name dropping a couple of times during this episode, Chad Henne. For me, looking at the Mahomes, you know, quote unquote injury, because I mean, it was a rough hit. And anytime that you have a concussion, the recovery time really, really varies. And I think Henne needs to be ready to step up in a game that is going to be, in my opinion, a little bit more competitive than the Browns games. I mean, the Chiefs were able to control the Browns for much of that game. It never really felt, even though at times it felt like the Browns were gaining back a little momentum, you know, a quick three and out really killed a lot of their drives. And I don't think that we're going to see the same thing with the Bills. So if Henne doesn't have to come in, he is going to need to play much better than that terrible, terrible interception in the end zone. That is a backup quarterback throw, right? That is 100% the most backup quarterback throw I think I have seen all season long. And then on the opposite side, I'm going to go, I mean, obviously, you know, late in January, I feel like running game is important. I'm going to go with Devin Singletary. Zach Moss is out. So, you know, we're going to need to see, and Allen's great scrambling. I mean, if you look at a lot of the games this year, he's been the number one rusher on the team because their rushing attack has been poop. It's been bad. We've talked about that before. So, you know, you're going up against the best team in the NFL. You are 100% going up against the best team in the NFL, and you need to go through and really try and take advantage of it. I really hope that for the Bills' sake that they are able to, because this is a Chiefs team that is not going to be held to 3 points.
Absolutely not. For me, I'm going with from the Chiefs, I'm going to go with Frank Clark as an X factor. This is Spagnuolo defense through and through. They're going to want to get pressure on Josh Allen early and often. I think we're going to try to see Allen trying to do quick passes to Diggs, Beasley, Gabriel Davis, Isaiah McKenzie, anyone he can. Dawson Knox, I don't think he cares who it is. Just get open quick and get the ball out. I don't know if they're going to emphasize the run game as much. I think that they just need to say, hey, almost that Brady-esque plan against them, only Allen is mobile, where it's, hey, go ahead and rush. Oh, 2 seconds. Through the ball. So Frank Clark getting the pressure, getting to Allen, maybe making Allen make a mistake. I think that would be a huge advantage for the Chiefs defense if he is able to do that. On the other side, sticking with the defense, I'm going to go with Tre'Davious White. I think it's debatable off and on if Hill or Kelce have the bigger impact on that offense. I think Tre'Davious White needs to show up and show that he is a true number one, because whether it's Henne or Mahomes, Hill is a dangerous threat. I mean, look at what the Browns gave up on 4th and 1. It was a quick pass to Hill. Clearly they value his role and his ability in that offense. So I think Tre'Davious White being able to match up and potentially try to match up one-on-one, or at least not need a consistent double team, is going to be required for the Bills defense to keep the Chiefs from scoring, you know, crazy amounts of points like they normally do. So as far as a points total or a spread here, I really don't want to pick one because
you've got to.
It's just a mess. I'm going to go out on a limb and say something like Bills 23, Chiefs 20. And the reason is I do think Mahomes is going to be out, and I think that the Bills are going to find a way to get the win.
I love it.
It's weird because I picked the Ravens the last game against the Bills, and now I'm taking the Bills over the Chiefs. You tell me Mahomes is in there, it probably converts a touchdown or a field goal into a touchdown. And, you know, maybe it's 24-23 Chiefs. Either way, I'm riding that Bills plus three line right now. I think that they are dangerous enough on offense. The last time they lost was the Hail Mary. They have been playing with their hair on fire. They've been playing better since that time than the Chiefs have. The Chiefs have always been in these close one-score games, which feels so un-Chief-like, for lack of a better term. And so I think that the Bills hang around and at least can pull off the upset.
So I'm going to take it a step further. If Mahomes doesn't play, I think the Bills win 28-17. If Mahomes does play, then I think that the Chiefs win, and I think it's probably pretty handily by a similar score, but a similar margin. It's all down to being able to put Josh Allen and that offense behind early. Because if you put them behind early and they are a rather one-dimensional offense, then you can control how Josh Allen has to beat you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can, and to be fair, that's been the blueprint to beat the Bills, but teams really haven't been able to execute that. The Chiefs do have the personnel, I think, to execute that on both sides of the ball and being able to shut him down and put pressure on him to score points in the air versus letting that offense tick at its own pace. So you control time of possession, you go through, you put points on the board, and then you force Allen to throw for more downs than, you know, you otherwise would like, not allowing the run to form at all. Then, yeah, great. You're winning this game pretty handily. Without Mahomes, I don't see that happening. I see them struggling on offense, and then they're allowing Josh Allen to go through, play at his own pace, and then we see the Bills win the game. So I also agree in that I think Mahomes is going to be out. Give me the Bills and let me set up this horrific, you know, nightmare matchup for Bills fans. You thought the nightmare and the bad guy was gone, but he's back. The bogeyman is back. You didn't really get rid of Brady. He was there waiting at the end of the day, the end of the line, all along.
Let's not forget that this year's Super Bowl is in Raymond James Stadium. So the Bucs would have literal home field advantage for the first time for anyone in a Super Bowl. It would be quite odd to have to play Tom Brady literally in Tom Brady's new house.
If there's anything that feels more Bills-esque to happen, right? I can't think of it.
Well, friends, I do appreciate you listening to another episode of Brody Sports Talk.
Countrymen, lend me
ears. Please make sure that you subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts and rate us 5 stars so that more people can find and enjoy our odd, eclectic mix
special,
of NFL
special
talk.
Brand of humor. Special brand of humor, right?
I mean, where else do you hear people talk about McDaniels and McDonald's in the same sentence?
I hopefully nowhere else. Please just let it be contained to this podcast. Nobody else.
I was trying to decide if I needed to make a mask comment about putting masks on those things, and I was like, I'm just gonna stay away from that. Yeah. Maybe stay 6 feet away.
There you go. Social distance from your terrible puns.
They're awesome.
Okay. Sure, Jan. Going Brady Bunch on you there.
I know. Marsha.
Unexpected. God, why do we do this when we close out episodes? It's like we record these too late and then we just get a little bit too goofy.
You always have to make sure you listen to the end of the episode because you don't know what on earth we're going to say.
Always,
it's going to be something random.
Always.
We do appreciate you listening and tuning in to us. Please find us on Twitter at Brody Talk. It's the best place to interact with us. And my name's Caleb, he's Sean, and I am signing out.
Later.